This is Chasing Wisdom, your source for conversation and serious ideas for those striving to become wiser leaders in business. Your host is Dr. Sam Serto. Sam is the Steinmetz Professor of Management in the Graduate School of Business at Rollins College in Winter Park, Florida. He also serves as a leader at Northland, a church distributed located in Central Florida. Along with leaders from various fields, our goal is to provide practical wisdom for those navigating real-world business challenges. Welcome to this conversation about how to become a wiser leader in business, Bible, and life.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Sam Serto, and you're listening to the Chasing Wisdom podcast. Here, leaders talk about business, Bible, and life to help all of us become wiser leaders. Today, our guest is Eddie Moreton. Eddie is the executive director of Lift Orlando, where his mission is to break the cycle of poverty through neighborhood revitalization. Prior to this, Eddie spent 7 years as the executive director of LifeWork Leadership Orlando, a premier leadership development organization. For the past 10 years, he has served as senior fellow at Path North in Washington, D.C., helping senior leaders around the country broaden their definition of success. Eddie has a passion for inspiring and equipping business leaders to make a difference. He lives in Orlando with his wife, Giselle, and their two children, Isabella and Christopher. Welcome to the studio, Eddie. It's a great honor to have you here today.
Thank you, Sam. The honor really is mine. I'm delighted to be here with you.
Well, thank you. You know, one thing, before we really get started, in the intro, we focused on an emphasis relating to broadening the definition of success for leaders. What, in general terms, does that entail?
Well, so often you get trapped with the idea that money is the ultimate measure of what success looks like. And today, most people intuitively know that's a faulty assumption. But they don't know how to get out of that rat race. They don't know how to get at, you know, this mindset that focuses on that as the pursuit. Mm-hmm. But it's an empty and hollow pursuit. And defining life is so much more. The legacy that you leave, the impact you have on your children, the quality of your marriage in the long run, the way that you multiply your knowledge, gifts, and talents in the lives of other people. Do you provide avenues and platforms for others to succeed? That's the kind of stuff that makes you feel successful, makes you know that you've made good use of your time on earth when you're lying on your deathbed.
All right. You've just given us sort of a benchmark for all the listeners to evaluate their leadership styles. Let's talk a little bit now. Let's jump into Lift Orlando.
Yes.
Tell us about it.
Well, Lift Orlando, it's been an amazing journey, even though we're just 4 years old, but it really is born out of the spirit of wanting to inquire, can we really have a dramatically different outcome in addressing complex social issues by bringing together two unlikely parties? Most social change conversations are in the realm of the public sector, the government entities, or not-for-profits, but there are two audiences usually left out. The poor, on one end, are only seen as the recipients of programs and services, as clients, or in the worst cases, as the problem to be solved. And on the other end of the spectrum, business leaders are most often just relegated to writing checks. Mm-hmm. Give us your money, we'll do some good work, tell you the sob story, come back for more. Mm-hmm. Well, in Orlando, we have a long history of doing that really well, with over 4,000 nonprofits and charities in town, and yet we rank among the worst cities for the well-being of the poor. So Lift Orlando, which by definition is a partnership between business leaders and neighborhood residents in our most distressed neighborhoods in Central Florida, primarily around the Citrus Bowl downtown, to break the cycle of poverty, not just alleviate it, but to actually see a generation rise up from low-income conditions into the realm of opportunities. And it's through a holistic vision. We do mixed-income housing, cradle-to-career education, community health and wellness, and long-term economic viability.
So you are actually in the process and the business of transforming neighborhoods.
Literally, we think that place matters. Mm-hmm. You can teach people how to have a good attitude and good skills and start opening doors, but we know today in America that your zip code is a greater predictor to your life outcomes, whether you'll graduate from high school, end up behind bars, live off of the system, or even your entire life expectancy can be determined by the zip code where you grow up. So every city has these zip codes that are these black holes of distress, and where we're seeing all these flare-ups all over the country, that are causing us all so much anxiety. It's the end result of the neglect we get made of these neighborhoods. It's time to reinvest in them and in the people in them to change that.
In some ways, this is a very novel kind of an organization. Lift Orlando is kind of a novel organization in that there aren't a lot of people doing this. So when you think about trying to explain this to the people who are listening, can you tell us a little bit about Westlake Village? And
yes.
And how you're actually doing physical changes in the neighborhood as well as helping people grow as individuals.
Absolutely. So Westlakes is a name derived by residents that we began to engage. Before we started coming up with any ideas on what to do, we asked people who live there. So that's a unique distinctive of this work, is to see residents as the origin of the best ideas, of the things that you invest in being things that they lead. But I'll really share the best example that gave us sort of courage and comfort that this was even possible was actually done starting 20 years ago in Atlanta. An area called Eastlake was the highest crime area in the Atlanta region. They had the worst public housing project and the largest. It was known as Little Vietnam by people who lived nearby it because it was so dangerous to drive by. It was called Eastlake Meadows. And the school there was the worst school in the Atlanta school system, number 69 out of 69 schools. This model that we're applying was started there by Tom Cousins, a billionaire commercial real estate developer, eventually joined to expand its reach by Warren Buffett and Julian Robinson. And so these three 80-year-old billionaires provide free consulting on this model to cities like us. But they have now created a beautiful mixed-income neighborhood. The school is the number one school for the Atlanta public school system. In fact, most years it ranks number one or number two for the whole state of Georgia. And these kids beat out every rich neighborhood school, every subject, every grade. It's still 90% African-American, 60% free and reduced lunch. So it proves these children can learn, they can succeed, they can compete. But you have to recreate the environments they're in so that that's possible.
One of the things that I believe was the catalyst for this group is that there was in Orlando a huge project based upon renovating the Citrus Bowl. I guess now it's called Camping World. And that as the Citrus Bowl developed in all of its radiance, people started walking around the neighborhood surrounding it, and their hearts were touched. Is that?
That is correct. In fact, who might credit as our founder is Tom Sidema. He's the CEO of CNL Financial Group and had been in Orlando a couple years, driving from his home in Winter Park to his office downtown before he was invited to a New Year's Day game at the then Citrus Bowl and drove through Paramore for the very first time and had heard we Peru's 65,000 people come through that area for that game every year and could not believe what he was seeing. I mean, you drive through Paramore most days, it looks like you're driving through a third world country. Mm-hmm. And yet he could see his high rise just out his rearview mirror. And that broke his heart. He began to ask a lot of questions. And eventually when he met Steve Hogan, the night we announced we were spending $210 million on the new stadium, he sort of elbowed him about how we were spending that much money in a neighborhood that poor. Actually, the lowest income neighborhood in Orange County. And Steve Hogan at Florida Citrus Sports, really, he really had this heartbeat already for figuring out, could this new building represent the first time in America we see a football stadium, of all things, actually be good for the neighborhood it's in?
Perfect. So when you think about what you provide through Westlakes, one of the issues focuses on education. Mm-hmm. And people listening might think, well, is this a giveaway program? As you talk about it, writing checks. And why does helping education in this area, is it good business in your mind and why?
So the Westlakes community, led really by residents that represent all the homeowners associations there, but early on they were the opposition we met at the ground as they were suspicious about our intentions showing up, really began to surface what mattered most to them. And so the children, the schools there was one of those top priorities. But the reality is that by not investing in these schools, schools in neighborhoods of concentrated poverty produce for us the largest number of dropouts, which lead to the largest group of felons, which lead to children and families living off of the system. And the public subsidies spent on families that are the product of neglected neighborhoods are far more expensive than the millions of dollars you could put in prevention, putting these children on a path to success where they not only avoid us that cost, but actually end up contributing so much more value to the same community.
And ultimately, not only does it save perhaps tax dollars in the long run, but these people then become customers.
Absolutely.
Who
tax-paying citizens,
that's right.
Entrepreneurs, you name it.
One of the things that we have as a feature in this in each podcast called Sunday to Monday, and it has to do with what you might hear on a Sunday from the pulpit and then carry through your work life.
That's right.
And I'd like to present a verse to you and see how this fits in to your themes here. And the verse is Proverbs 23:23, and it says, God wants you to develop skills and educate yourself so that you can become the kind of person he shaped you to be.
Hmm.
So this sort of seems like that being a Christian and providing education to others is one and the same, in that God has shaped each of us, given us talents that oftentimes can't be developed without education. Does that make sense to you?
It sure does. And one of the most effective places where education happens that shapes character and mindsets and worldviews is the workplace. And I love that you call that segment Sunday to Monday, because I do feel there's a gap for most Christians as to what they agree to, nod their heads, and say amen to on Sunday, and how they actually make decisions in that boardroom on Monday. And the translation of that idea, if every believer saw themselves as an instrument for the advancing of practical biblical application of truth in the most secular of settings. One of my kind of heroes in history, in American history, is John Wanamaker, who founded the modern department store, but was in seminary when he decided that he wanted to make his cash register his pulpit. Was the inventor of modern advertising with this line, truth in advertising, designed the very first price tags on items to be completely transparent. And everything he did literally transformed the world of retail and business, but he was educating the world on how God would run a store. By translating what meant so much to him on Sunday to something practical on Monday.
Terrific. Now let's jump into what your job is. We have people who are listening to try to help themselves become better, wiser leaders, more successful leaders. You have an extremely powerful board, as I look at it, and you have a wonderful staff. What kind of things do you do to lead your staff? How do you see your leadership style, and why does it fit into this circumstance?
Well, I'll say this has been something that has been a constant work for me, because it's nothing is more important than maximizing how well we leverage the gifts and talents of other people, both for the privilege it is to do that, as well as for the greater outcome you get when you do that well. And a phrase that may not make a lot of sense, but for me it's been a good reminder, is to do less and lead more. As leaders, we feel the burden to work harder, longer, do more than everybody else. And yet at the very same time, it's our increased bandwidth and margin that gives us the ability to pay attention, to listen, to reflect, to plan, to look around the bend in order to lead people well and lean on them more, providing sort of space for their strengths and gifts to thrive, as opposed to us continually crowding the stage. And so becoming less so that other people can be in that spotlight more and more is an important discipline. It also gives us time to listen to the Lord with clarity about the wisdom he wants us to follow in leadership.
Sounds very powerful. You do strategy. You develop strategy. How do you do that? What's your process for that?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think these days there's a balance between being bold enough to sound almost a little crazy in what you do. Conservative, incremental development of ideas don't necessarily attract a lot of passion and bold investment. And so you have to be just on this side of crazy in the size of what you're pursuing, but have strategies that are well-founded, that you're looking at, you know, evidence-based models that have some proof in it, so that the left brain is satisfied in that there's some real thought behind this, backing up the crazy thoughts and ideas. And I think oftentimes people lean too much on either one of those. They get too logical and practical, or too crazy about the big idea that it has no foundation underneath it.
Trust in God. That's one of your favorite topics.
Yes.
Tell us about that and why it's critical.
It's practically all he really asks of us, really. At the end of the day, we can be responsible for many great deeds, but if they're not done in absolute trust and surrender, they're not worth much to him. It's not the how beautiful our skills are displayed. It's how great we set up a stage for him to show up.
There's a great verse that kind of fits into this whole theme of trust, and it's Psalms 20, 7, and it says that some trust in chariots, obviously not in our time, some trust in cars, we'll play it that way, some trust in chariots and some in horses, but we trust in the name of the Lord our God. And it kind of differentiates between trusting earthly things and trusting God to help move us forward in a positive way.
It is really believing in his the faithfulness of his love and living in that.
I really would like to move into a topic that deals with community responsibility, social responsibility. Some call it corporate social responsibility. And would you agree that leaders are moving toward becoming more and more involved in communities overall in terms of corporate responsibility? Is that an issue that people are pursuing more than they have in the past?
Yeah, I think it's becoming an inevitable factor. Whether leaders are interested in it or not, the social mores is so bent towards that. Boomers don't want to leave the stage without having left an impact. Millennials don't want to spend their lives without feeling like it matters. And so you got these two largest chunks of our population with sort of this inner motivation to want to find meaning in everything. And in an affluent society, that is the rarest commodity, is to find meaning, a sense of significance, because every material need we have is pretty much satisfied. Our very homeless are better off than most people in third world countries. And so people have a deep desire for some greater purpose. And if you're not tapping into the deepest felt need in other humans, you won't be in business very long in most cases.
So people who are driving down the street listening right now are involved in so many different kinds of organizations and businesses, and yet they have this felt need that you're talking about. And they're trying to decide, how do I do this? Your organization is like a channel to help people to participate in one way. How would you advise people on deciding the kinds of things they should be doing in a community?
Well, you could talk for a long time about that, but to attempt to be brief, I'd say, number one, focus on being authentic. Consider the story and narrative of whether it's your founder, your leader, the company itself. What are the areas where there are natural intersections with the history of the organization or its leadership that connect with a personal passion, a need, some frustration within or outside in the world that can be intersected with? Think local. Think about how you invest in areas where your people can see and feel and pride themselves in being connected to something in their own backyard. It also allows you to leverage a lot of other relationships towards moving about something that brings about real change, not just number of people touched every year. And then I'd say thirdly, find ways to invest in people, not just projects. It's easy to get caught up with big visions for buildings or construction projects and things that sound very fancy and exciting, but the reality is at the end of the day, it's individual lives that have the most return for investment.
Good advice. Good advice, Eddie. Pearl of wisdom. Hmm. We end each podcast with your pearl of wisdom.
Oh.
Something that you would like for people to take with them, and something that you believe is valuable for them. In a short sentence or two, what would that be, Eddie?
Well, I'll return to what's been sort of my mantra for years, is that though I've never met you, I know this to be true about you, that you were created to make a difference, no matter what you do for a living, that business has a purpose beyond making profits, and its legacy is in the character of its people, that your work has meaning beyond making money, for the character of your work reflects the image of your maker.
That's a good thought to leave with. I'm sorry to say that our time is up. Thank you so much for being here today, Eddie.
It's been my pleasure.
You can reach Eddie at Lyft Orlando on Facebook, and the address there is Lyft-Orlando. Thanks to all of you for being here on Wisdom Wednesday. You can keep in touch with me on Facebook at chasing.wisdom or my website, chasewisdom.com. I'll see you next Wednesday. You know the drill. Keep chasing until then. God bless.
You've been listening to Chasing Wisdom with host Dr. Sam Serto. We would love to hear from you regarding this podcast. You can reach us at northlandchurch.net/chasingwisdom. We will be here each Wednesday with a fresh look at being a wiser leader in business, Bible, and life. Want to reach out to Dr. Serto? Email him at sserto@rollins.edu.